Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Pre-owned inventory, but it's so important to have the Sunbury Motors guarantee, and that's critical. And a service department and service is more important than ever on your vehicles. Routine, oil changes, I mean, you know, they take care of all that. Inspections, they take care of it. Diagnostics, tough stuff, they take care of it. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Neil Coulong in a moment. First, our play-by-play call of the day. A big fourth quarter for Andrew Wiggins.
Wiggins drives and finishes! Exclamation point from Andrew Wiggins!
Wiggins has been brilliant with 42 minutes of play, 26 points, 13 rebounds.
Mike Breen with the call last night on ABC. Andrew Wiggins on a night where Steph Curry did not hit a three. Had 12 points last night. They needed others, and then in a balanced attack, Jordan Poole played well, Klay Thompson played well, but it was Wiggins that was a separator last night, and the Warriors took Game 5 and lead the series 3-2. All right, let's get to the NFL now, and let's bring in Neil Coulong. Neil, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
It is indeed. I hope you guys are doing as well as I am on this beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day out. When you get to a camp, somebody has to run with the ones and somebody has to run with the twos. Right? And in the end, at least at this hour, when they go to training camp and everybody's still healthy, it looks like Mitch Trubisky's going to run with the ones and Mason Rudolph with the twos. At least that's how it played out at OTAs. Anything that you heard one way or the other as to what they like, don't like?
No, not really. The first thing Mike Tomlin would say is it's football in shorts. You know, they're not going to get incredibly in-depth into it. And you understand why. I mean, it's fairly obvious. To your point, yeah, somebody's got to go with this team. Somebody's got to go with that team. You could mix it up if you really want to, but they're not heavily evaluating skill at that point. Most of it, this is one thing I've always kind of taken notice of what Tomlin says in regards to whether it's OTAs or minicamp. What they're trying to do is prepare the players to know what to expect for training camp.
Right.
And that's the point where Tomlin does his evaluation. He's not really looking at minicamp beyond a conditioning perspective. That's what you hear a lot of the times. The guys at the end of the roster, if they show up even a little bit out of shape, it's not going to fly. They need guys who are serious about it. So the conditioning stuff, you can understand they're looking at that. But as far as who's doing what, installing the offense, all that stuff, it's done in training camp. So in that moment, I think it's really just more get people to know who's around them, what they're doing, and what they can expect come training camp. And I'm sure there will be times we will see Trubisky, Rudolph, and Pickett playing with the ones on offense. Yeah. You know, and we're also using ones here as if this is something that's set in stone. I mean, come on, this is not one of the most outstanding units in the NFL offensively. They have a bunch of new offensive linemen. They drafted two new wide receivers. There are a lot of guys that they're going to be mixing in and out in a lot of different situations. I think that it's imperative for them to do exactly that. They need to discover who they can be, what the team is going to be, and how they want to proceed with things moving forward. And I think there's a lot that where we sit, what we're allowed to observe, what we're allowed to even talk about, we don't know yet. You know, I think they have a plan. I think this is an offense that's going to look very different than it did last season. And a large part of that is the personnel that they willingly and intentionally brought in to play a certain way that they weren't in the past. It's going to look a lot different. Obviously, without seven under center, it's not going to be the same type of look that they've had in quite a long time. And with that, I think they're taking the opportunity to really change schematically what they're trying to do. And those are the types of things they're going to prepare them to work on leading into training camp. So whoever's where right now, it means even less than it has in the past. You get a sense of competition around the whole unit, and it's going to have to be that way because there just aren't very many locks on the team, certainly not at the depth level. You know, I think we have a very intriguing training camp ahead of us just because of that.
Of course, the running joke I always have is the number of stops I saw Matt Canada at, you know, Indiana, Wisconsin, you know, Pitt, Maryland. Okay. Well, one thing you can tell is that Matt Canada is a very motion-heavy offensive coordinator. How well does that fit Mitch Trubisky?
That's an interesting question. I think it would require a profound answer, simply because motion projects a lot of different things. I don't want to say there's a lot you can do with motion because you can do whatever you want with or without motion. The idea is putting one person in motion suggests a lot of different things. Yeah. I would say, depending on the skill level of the quarterback and depending on the skill level of the guy who's in motion, the answer to that would come. It's funny to me, there are a lot of people in Pittsburgh in particular who act as if motion is some kind of foreign concept to the team.
Right.
Antonio Brown ran in motion probably two of three plays in 7 years. Mm-hmm. He was constantly in motion. And a large part of that is, one, it's not very big. You don't want to give them the opportunity to press him at the line of scrimmage if you can help it. And two, he's the most dangerous player, offensive player of the decade, in my opinion. You get that guy on the move, so you can't really reveal exactly what he's doing. And he's going to make the defense change. Needless to say, and I'm choosing my words carefully here, there are certain receivers who might not quite be Antonio Brown, and it won't make much of a difference from that perspective whether he's in motion or not. You don't have to collapse the defense around one guy, so that particular player going in motion doesn't have to mean anything. Trickeration. You're showing something that you might not be doing. Seattle did it a lot with Russell Wilson, especially early in his career, and a large part of that was to set up certain read looks for him, you know, get the ball to a certain guy in space. You're going to misdirect the defense to look this way. It's smart in that sense. I think it's wise of them to do it. I think motion is the necessary component to offensive success, just because they can move in the defense while they're able to move. Where the defense is and the leverage that they are applying in certain situations is based on where the offense is lined up. If you can change that, if you can mix them up even just a little bit, you've got a wider tactical advantage than you had even before the play started anyway. So to me, you want to be able to get certain players in motion to help set up targets for them, to get them the ball in space and let them be able to run and do their thing. It's to confuse the defense perhaps as to what you're doing. It mixes up tendencies. It's kind of like, you know, don't ask me where this came from. It's a long story. But with desserts, for example, you just kind of put cookie dough into everything now, right? That's the main ingredient. You don't know why. Some people, I'm not one of them, but some people would contend that adding cookie dough to any type of ice cream makes the ice cream better. Motion is not different than that. If you have one basic play and you can run four iterations of that, add two different guys that can go in motion, now you've got 16 plays out of it. And that those are 16 plays that you only have to really practice two different ways for most of the team. The core players of the team, your line, your quarterback, are familiar with what the blocking assignment is going to be on this play. Who goes in motion and what the quarterback's read is involves a smaller amount of people on the team. So you can expand your playbook in a more efficient way and create essentially new plays by doing the same things that you've been doing. For a quarterback like Mitch Trubisky, I think that's important. I think that's important because this is me, and I'm going to probably upset a lot of people. I don't feel Mitch Trubisky sees the whole field well. I don't think he gets a great picture of everything that's happening on the field.
I agree with that.
And because of that, this gives him the ability to have a guy moving to a spot that he knows he's going to, and he can make that look and that throw. Physically speaking, he's got a nice arm. I don't think he's terribly inaccurate. Mechanically, I'm not sure how much he's really going to improve in that regard. It's the processing of the entire field. He's not a guy that can go into a high-to-low read offense and make the right decision based on depth and who's where and process a ton of things at one time. But if you give him motion, he's got some rhythm going into the play. He's got a good sense of where that's going to be, and he knows that if that gets followed, this spot's going to be open. So really, he's looking at two things on the play. That makes him more efficient. It makes his decision-making much easier. If a guy, you know, to be blunt, if a guy can't make decisions, the last thing you want to do is give him five decisions when you can just give him two.
Right.
You make the right decision of these two and hope that that works out. And if they execute properly, the theory is that that can work. I would bet that that's probably what they're trying to do with him. He has enough experience to say he can do these two things well. If he can't go to three, four, maybe even five, and all right, he's not an all-pro guy. We're not paying him to be an all-pro guy. Make these two throws. The rest of the offense is going to contribute to this. I think that that's a cost-effective way in the NFL to get some success, especially in a year when you need a bridge quarterback and you just drafted 120 overall. So motion should be a part of Trubisky as well as where the Steelers are trying to go as an offensive team in 2022 and beyond.
By the way, that drafted quarterback is third on the depth chart. It's OTAs. Don't panic. All right, so now we get to, I want to ask about Devin Bush. Saw Bush at Michigan, obviously, a couple times against Penn State. Unquestionably great athlete with speed, no doubt. But also in watching him at Michigan, I felt that I would give him a low grade on instincts. How much did that show up last year, and how badly do they need him to play better instinctive football?
I'm glad you brought that up. I remember you and I talking about that when they drafted him. And the knee-jerk reaction that I would have is the speed piece of it is alluring for sure, especially for a defensive player, especially for the Steelers, who have been on a binge of finding fast defensive players who could hit. The Steelers were leveraged in the situation that they were in. We saw what happened when the paper mache Band-Aid that they put to the Ryan Shazier absence broke through against Jacksonville in the playoffs. They needed a linebacker with pedigree, with elite athletic skills. They needed somebody. And in retrospect, they probably should have listened to you more in regards to the instinctive part of it. To suggest it showed up last season is I underselling it quite a little bit. And it's funny to me because what I go to is I believe it was Merrill Hodge fairly recently, in the last 6 weeks or so, he eviscerated Bush as a player. And you heard his comments and you read over what he's saying. And to be honest, yeah, it kind of matched. I mean, he might have been, you know, some for show in there, but it wasn't far off. And you watch the film, especially if you're looking at an end zone angle, focusing on Bush, especially against the run, a lot of times it's like, what are you doing? Why would you go there? I mean, I don't know how well he saw where the play was developing. And I don't, you know, looking back on it before he got hurt, it wasn't great either. But it was, to me, it was like the injury put a sense of hesitation in his mind. So he no longer had that speed. He didn't have that reactive ability that could have kind of trumped the instinct a little bit. And maybe the Steelers' hope was, we're going to get him a ton of reps. We're going to make it simple for him. So he can grow on his knowledge of the game. He was really young. Keep that in mind. I understand his pedigree as far as who his dad was, mm-hmm. he played at Michigan and all that. You still need reps as an NFL player to really adapt to the speed of the game and what's going on. I think he was more of a project than we probably would have wanted him to be considered, considering what they gave up to get him and where they drafted him. It stuck out like a sore thumb on their defense all season long, and to a point where if Cam Hayward was not playing at literally a defensive player of the year level like he was for half the season, it would have been worse than that complete collapse that they had at the two-thirds way mark. You know, the Chargers game, the Vikings game, they couldn't stop water from running uphill, and Bush was absolutely a big part of that. Joe Schobert didn't help things either. You could see why Jacksonville was perfectly fine getting out of him, and it wasn't just money. He's a flawed player. I'm not sure what his career is going to look like from this point forward, but they had the worst pairing of inside linebackers in the league. I mean, they were awful. I think the injury took away his superpower, and he had been leaning on that superpower his whole career to that point, and he could get away with it. He was fast enough, he's athletic enough to do the things that a really good inside linebacker would be able to do. Whether he was physically back or not, he'll tell you one thing now, and I'm sure he'll tell you a different thing 3 years from now. Mentally, to me, I hate to say these things, but it looked to me like he might have been a little bit adverse to contact. He wasn't diving into piles. He wasn't playing kind of with that reckless abandon that you need your inside linebacker to play with. And some of that, you have to think, is he's worried about getting tangled up. He's worried about getting his legs cut out from under him. That's going to slow you down. Just the active thought, that fear processing in your head, slows you down to the point that you're not playing all out. And if he doesn't have that, he can't make up for the fact that he's in the wrong spot. And there were a lot of examples of that. It was bad. I was surprised. Well, I shouldn't say surprised. I don't know what choice they truly had. They had to back him. They had to support him. But it was not a decision that was made on the best thing for the team today. They had to get him out there. They had to get his head right. He was not playing well enough to play as often as he did. And I think in a normal situation, if he was a third-round pick 3 years ago, he would not have continued playing after the midway point of that season. He just wasn't good. Where he'll be now, I don't know. I think that's the question of the season, certainly for their defense. They have a very good defensive team, and they have the opportunity, in my opinion at least, to be an elite-level defense if Bush can play like the player that they hoped that he was going to be. You hope that the lack of option getting picked up, which is a shock. I mean, that's takes a lot for you to have traded assets up to 10 overall to take a guy that you don't want after 4 years. You might also argue that the price point of that fifth-year option for an inside linebacker is a tad high. With all the playing time that he's had, you might make that argument. But top to bottom, he did not play well last season, and it's absolutely a prove-it contract year for him. So for his sake and the team's sake, I hope that he's going to be ready to go, and I hope that he's been able to work through some of these things and really figure out who he is as a player. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was kind of, you know, assignment and priority number 1, 2, 3, and 4 for Brian Flores. You know, you got to fix him. We got to get this guy right. And we got to get him playing at a much higher level than we've seen so far.
Yeah, they declined the fifth-year option. That fifth-year option would have guaranteed him $10.9 million. He played 14 games last year. He had 70 tackles. Remember, that's the position that's supposed to be getting 120 tackles. All right. So, Neil, appreciate it very much. Thanks so much, as always, my friend.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday. Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
You just don't seem happy with my Derek Jeter analysis defensively.
Listen, I know we had his times of when he had errors and didn't look great. I get that, but
What did I say? I said he is a good defensive shortstop. I said he is not a great defensive shortstop. I didn't say fair, poor, or mediocre. I said good.
No, you I'm okay with.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Back here on the Steve Jones Show, Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve will be there in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, lots of pre-owned inventory. Great service department that simply gets it done for your vehicle with the diagnostics, with the inspections, with it all, and a sales staff that's not just there for the sale, but is there for you. It's all part of the Sunbury Motors guarantee.
They're not just there for the glory like Derek Jeter. They're actually there to work.
Sure.
I'm glad you concur. All right, so... Does Lisa know how to push your buttons like this?
Yes.
Have you ever thought of it as a me problem?
That's also a yes.
Like, is it a me problem? Oh, my God. Big Ten football media days, by the way, are going to be July 26 and 27 at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Also, Live for Life is going to take place on June 30th. It's going to take place at the Lash Practice Field starting at 5. It's the 19th annual event. Doors open at 4:30. The suggested donation will be $10 for adults, $5 for kids to support the Penn State Chapter of Uplifting Athletes. More than 80 football squad members are expected to participate in Lift for Life. Chris Stahl, the long snapper, is the president. Landon Tangwall, guard tackle, is the vice president. Nick Dawkins, center guard, is the treasurer. Tyler Jasansky, who is the backup long snapper, is the director of operations. And Liam Clifford is the assistant director of operations. Uplifting Athletes has raised more than $4.5 million in support of the rare disease community. $1.5 million has been given to fund rare disease research. And again, that will be June 30th. Live for Life at 5 p.m. at the Penn State at the Lash Practice Fields. It's the 19th annual event. So that's that. And then, of course, the other story is football media days, Big Ten media days, July 26 and 27, Tuesday, Wednesday. Penn State will be in the Wednesday session, the 27th. Now, it is my hope that they have, and I thought they would have it, in all honesty, as you know, listening to the show, I thought there was a good chance they could have the whole thing done by Memorial Day on the TV side. My hope is now that they have whatever they're going to do TV-wise completed by the time they get the media days. That way they can announce exactly what they're doing there. Now, the new contract doesn't, the first game of the new contract is still 15 months away. But you'd like to have it all settled, a little bit more than a year ahead of time. And they have a big decision to make. Now, Scott Docterman of The Athletic wrote an article today dealing with the upcoming Big Ten media deal. There isn't much in there that is new to this point. You have to remember that Kevin Warren, Kerry Kenny, who's the senior vice president, and also Fox Sports president Mark Silverman and Fox Sports executive vice president Larry Jones are the ones that entertained the final pitches this past week. Again, Fox is at the table, except they're on the Big Ten side of the table. They entertain final pitches from ABC, ESPN, NBC, CBS, and Amazon for rights packages. Right now, Fox owns 61% of the Big Ten network. Over time, they've acquired more and more. That's taken less of the burden, and especially in COVID, took less of a burden off of the Big Ten in terms of ownership. Now they have a big question to answer. A couple questions. Number one, let's get to the question of, which is, I think, the big one, and that is the wild card, and that is ESPN. ESPN ABC. So let's start with that. It is a two-pronged problem. So let's go with and they're both a bit complicated, but it's also an element in ESPN ABC that nobody writes about, but you got to write about it. You got to talk about it. Right? And I'll get to that in a moment. Now, the one people do talk about, and that is, over the years, ESPN does a great job of promoting ESPN. Now, is that a criticism? Absolutely not. Why do you think we tell everybody, hey, don't forget Shikellamy football coming up on Friday night. Hey, the Braves are going to be in action against Selins Grove. Hey, blah, blah, blah. Penn State football on Saturday on WKOK. Boom. We got the Eagles and the Phillies on Eagle 107. Why are we telling you that? Because we're promoting what we are carrying, right? That's what we do. We want to make sure that we've got the rights to, Bucknell football, basketball. We've got the rights to the Eagles, got the rights to the Steelers, rights to the Phillies. So that's why we're always telling you, hey, don't forget the game's coming up. Because that's what we carry. We want to cross-promote and let you know what we have. Well, ESPN does the same thing. And they are great at letting the world know what they have. In fact, I think they're the best at it. Which then brings with it their history. And it's not just the NHL, it's the Pac-12. When ESPN did not have the Pac-12, they rarely talked about the Pac-12. Now, you may counter and say, well, there wasn't much in the Pac-12 to talk about. True, but there's still a Power 5 conference that is worthy of some discussion and conversation. It's not as if Oregon didn't make the national championship game one year. when ESPN got the Pac-12 back, which included some Friday night games, Pac-12 at night on Saturdays, they talked more about the Pac-12. And, of course, we know with the NHL, coverage at a minimum, only when they had to. Now they have the NHL back, and they have a lot of coverage and features on the NHL and do a great job with it. So do you want ESPN ABC out of the mix? And if you do, you are running the risk of they will still talk about you, but not to the extent they would talk about you if they had you as part of their mix. So ESPN owns the college football playoff rights through the 2025 season. ESPN officials have made it clear, according to Scott Docterman of The Athletic, that the network is all in with the SEC and the ACC, because remember, they run both of their respective conference networks. And starting in 2024, ESPN will have the exclusive rights to SEC and ACC football and basketball. An industry source, though, and their two league sources have reiterated that ESPN is at the table. And according to one industry source, ESPN is still a very, very big part of this negotiating process. They're still firmly in the mix for everything that we're talking about here. Okay. And another industry source said the prevailing expectation is that Fox and ESPN will remain the primary partners, but the league is tempted by what CBS is doing at 3:30. And remember, CBS also does have some basketball rights. It's not as if CBS is an outside entity to the Big Ten. Remember, CBS carries select Sunday games of Big Ten basketball, plus they carry the Big Ten semifinals and the Big Ten championship game. So CBS is not an unknown entity in these talks. All right. Now let's get to the part, though, that is problematic with this. I already talked about the one problem. If you say no to ESPN, do you then go into not quite double secret probation, but you're put off to the side as the one they don't want, you know, that they'll only grudgingly talk about? That's one. Number two, what do you expect out of them? Do you expect primetime coverage? Because I just brought up what they're all in on. All those 3:30 games you've been seeing on CBS for the SEC for years, and we'll see this upcoming season and in 2023, right? Guess what? ESPN has the rights to all of those. Oh. Suddenly Texas A&M and Alabama on October 8th. Now, we all know CBS will have it. And CBS will probably put that game in primetime because of everything in the offseason. But, when ESPN gets it, that's going to be their primetime game. Auburn-Alabama is going to be their primetime game. LSU-Alabama is going to be their primetime game. Tennessee-Alabama is going to be their primetime game. Georgia and Florida down in Jacksonville probably is going to be their primetime game. They're going to be putting SEC big, the best games in the SEC on a given weekend are going to be their primetime games. What kind of room does that leave now for the Big Ten? So I advocate that, yes, put together some sort of package with ESPN where they're on here and there. But boy, it is awfully tempting to look at the Fox, CBS, NBC, noon, 3:30, and primetime as being very tempting while having some sort of secondary package with ESPN just to keep your foot in the door. Now comes the next part. Go ahead, Matt. You were going to say.
Well, my question was, when you say prime time, when it comes to doing the SEC, are we talking like Saturday night football?
Yeah, 7:30. Okay. Yeah, 7:30 Saturday.
Because
night.
I know ESPN has tons of other primetime games, but then they have the Saturday night football game too.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, so we're talking about the Saturday night football game. Okay. that that makes a lot of sense.
Well, I mean, they throw it on, they throw games on ABC too, but like the game that they think is the game,
right?
Is, to them, is going to be an SEC game.
Absolutely. Yeah, it makes complete sense.
Okay. I mean, they're paying almost $500 million for this doggone thing. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to sit there and go, you know, we got a contract. We probably should put Iowa and Michigan on. Looking around, we got Alabama against LSU. Let's see. I think we'll go with the SEC. Okay. Now, like a whiteout game, Penn State, Ohio State, that probably would be something they'd want in prime time. But, you know, okay, now here's the next part. What do you do with Amazon? To me, streaming is interesting. Amazon Prime is going to have the NFL Thursday night game. Major League Baseball broadcast two Major League Baseball games each Friday night on Apple TV. I have not heard anybody that likes it that has seen it. Last year, Notre Dame's home game with Toledo aired exclusively on Peacock. Okay. I was talking specifically with a Notre Dame fan last week, and this guy said, I love Notre Dame football. He said, they made me pay. He says, I was so mad that I had to pay to watch that game. He says, I was furious about it. He says, I don't want to be paid. He says, I'm already paying a cable bill. Why do I want to pay more for streaming? And what's happening with streaming, by the way? What's happened with Netflix? They stream. How's Netflix going? During the pandemic, great guns. What's it doing now? People are dropping it left and right. I mean, do you put together a Friday night game, like 5 or 6 on Amazon? I don't know. But that's problematic because that falls into an area of making your fans mad. Like, well, I already paid for this. Now I got what? I got to pay for this too? And that is something that they have to make a decision on. I think they'll get some streaming out of it because the money is just, I mean, it's so great that, and you know darn well they'll overpay for it. But that's where it stands. My hope is, it's only a hope now, that they've got this resolved by the time we get to Big Ten Media Days on July 26, 27. By the way, Fanatics and Topps launching college sports trading card programs. I believe Penn State's with Topps. So there you go. Topps has multi-year rights deals at between 23 and 25, more than 35 programs. There you go. Something else for the suit to get into.
F-O-U-L-E-D, that spells founder.
I told the suit not to put the Honus Wagner card onto the bike in the spokes. I said, don't do that. Wouldn't listen to me. He said that. He thought it would be cool. Now his Honus Wagner card, junk. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Been another rough show for Matt. He just did not like the Heath Bell caricature of the defense of Derek Jeter. Was a little more comfortable with my take on it, but again, it's just you weren't happy.
Not really, Brian, no.
Brian in Northern Virginia. Hello, Brian. How are you?
Hello, Steve. Doing great. How are you?
Pleasure to hear from you, Brian. Hope everything's well.
Yes, sir. I was just calling just to comment on the Big Ten media rights package. I agree that we have to have maybe some presence with ESPN, but the problem is ESPN has gotten so big, and that by having their deals with the SEC and the ACC, I believe all of their networks are going to be marginalized. So I think, in my opinion, it would be best for the Big Ten to try to strengthen the relationship with Fox or NBC or even CBS to try to get more of a better focus on the Big Ten product. But the caveat to that would be if, for example, Fox is going to carry an Ohio State, Penn State, we're the best game that week, put us in prime time. We can't be marginalized by our own partners and putting it at bad time slots and doing things that may negatively impact our publicity or recruiting, et cetera. But I think ESPN has gotten too big, and we need something to counter it. And there's a chance that the Big Ten could be a center point of some other sports conference if they were incentivized to really build us up and promote us.
All very good points, Brian. I agree with you. I do agree with you. I think you have a very good perspective on it. Because, for example, but the Big Ten has to do a better job of scheduling. In other words, you have to sit there and ask yourself, when's the World Series? When should I put Penn State and Ohio State? And take a hard stance role that I need that game when it's at Penn State in prime time. See, the Big Ten has to do a better job, too. And they've got to be, and they've got to work together instead of, we're going to pop this game here. Oh, gee, it might be opposite the World Series, so it's going to be at noon. No. You've got to think ahead, and you just can't be in a box all the time.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. I love the show. Great job.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate you. Good points. Very good points by Brian. Matt, you did all right.